Hello, my name is Sam Clements, and welcome to the special mini edition of the Picture House podcast. Today, well, I'm delighted to be joined by Kenneth Branagh, but I'm also delighted to say that my colleague Felicity Beckett conducted this interview, so we'll cut soon to Flick and Ken, I think that's what I like to be called, to talk about his new film, All Is True, which he's directed and stars in, and he plays William Shakespeare in the film. It's written by Ben Elton, and it's really fascinating wondering of what happened to Shakespeare when he stopped being Shakespeare. Shakespeare retired from life as a playwright and theatre operator after the Globe burned down, his famous London theatre burned down due to a faulty cannon, and he retreated back to the countryside. And then very little is actually known of what actually happened during that time, but Ben Elton here puts forward, you know, what could have happened upon his reunion with his family. His wife in this film is played by Judi Dench, and Ian McKellen also pops up, and it's just great to see Kenneth Branagh on stage once again with Judi Dench and Ian McKellen. It's got all of the sort of the scale and the class of Ken's previous movies as director, but it is done in quite a small sort of intimate way. A lot of this is It's a relationship story between his two daughters and his wife. It's sort of the interior shots reminded me of things like Stanley Kubrick's Barry Lyndon. It all looks like it's lit by sort of the natural candlelight and that sort of thing. I'm sure there was lots of trickery going on, which I didn't appreciate, but I sort of appreciated how it was made in that respect. And Kenneth Branagh is once again fantastic in such an iconic role. So anyway, that's enough from me. The film is All Is True. It's in cinemas now. And without further ado, Felicity Beckett talking to Kenneth Branagh. Enjoy.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
A really beautiful film.
Thank you very much.
It surprised me that it was so visually emotional and gorgeous autumnal palette, Caravaggio lighting. Can you tell me about your intentions with the colours and the darkness?
Well, the darkness was an interesting place to start, because when we tested and began to explore the idea of what Zach Nicholson, brilliant photographer, and I talked about, which was, can we just do candlelight at night, but nothing else, no extra lights at all, just candles? What does that do? And we found in tests that aside from the photographic quality and the sort of the painterly quality that we were after, so at one and the same time, we were trying to let that suggest period, but at the same time, we were close enough and with the candlelight playing to also suggest the humanity there. It was also going to bring real sort of expression out. We were going to get closer than usual. But what it did as a byproduct was it really took us back. Because there was so little light, you really lost a sense of where the cameras were. The light fell away so that you couldn't even work out the room. We happened to be very quiet where we were. And so that feeling that 1613 in Stratford would have had, no light pollution and no sound pollution, but beyond the noises of the country and the weather, a certain magic came with the darkness. And that magic was partly silence. It made you more careful. It made you more aware of just the fragility of things, I suppose. And so that and the idea that we would use wide-angle lenses really quite a lot to put people in big landscape. And we were always going from this dynamic of knowing that for most people's lives, it's about being in here and their contact with those that they know and love. But often we feel very insignificant and small as we walk into big landscape, big trees, big fields, big country, big sky. And suddenly that part of a what's it all about hits us. But also we wanted to sort of immerse the audience in that. So in as far as they could, take them into the darkness of an evening at a home in 1613 after dark, and also take them out into a landscape that Shakespeare was coming back and trying to sort of re-engage with.
Working with fellow Shakespearean scholar Ben Elton, did you ever lock horns over who knew Shakespeare best? Would he have said that?
Well, I tell you what we were agreed about, because Ben was so steeped in the work from his work on Upstart Crow. But we began our conversation about Shakespeare in 1988 when I was in a production of Much Ado About Nothing by Shakespeare that Ben came to see, that was directed by Judi Dench. And some twin aims were there. Judi liked things to be natural. She liked it to be very real. Ben felt we'd made things up. He went back to the text because he didn't believe that we'd made it up. I said, no, this is how we like to do it. It's as direct as possible. And he's always felt the same way, including feeling the same way about the very human touch in Shakespeare, the man, of being sort of sensitive about status. It's sort of hard to imagine, isn't it? And yet, 20 years into being the most prominent writer of the age, a phenomenal success, he comes back, and for some reason or another, it's important to him that he buy a shield, a coat of arms for £20, or about 3,000 or 4,000 quid now, that provides him with the right to be called gentleman. And he was also a property dealer, and, you know, he was interested in his mortgage, and the controversially left the second best bed for his wife. I think we agreed that those things that are hard to resolve inside what you might call the modernist or postmodern view of what a genius should be, who should be living a life that's mad, bad, and dangerous to know, instead of the what appears to be on the surface the relatively mundane life of the Shakespeare who comes home. But, you know, I don't think anybody's really mundane, even if some of their lives are just to do with, you have to buy the shopping, you've got to make some food, you've got to have a roof over your head. These are preoccupations that keep you alive. Not everybody can afford to be, you know, flamboyant and glamorous and Byronic, as it were. So we agreed that there was something about what Southampton refers to with in Ian McKellen's performance as Shakespeare's smallness. He says, why are you such a small man? Why have you led such a small life? I don't know. I don't think I've led a small life. He answers, and we try and answer the question with him. So we mostly agreed, but we've known each other so long, and we've worked on many things together that didn't get made, that we had a process. Best thing about working with people you like, rather than it being a sort of smug friends fest, is that it's much more direct. You know, sleeves are rolled up pretty quickly, and it's like families. Yeah. You know, you're going to say things a little more directly than you might if you didn't know people well. So no politeness, but plenty of passion.
And I loved that one of the themes is that, you know, Shakespeare's fame and glory mean nothing mm-hmm. when mm-hmm. love, real love,
yes.
and pain
yes, yeah,
are
yeah.
present.
Yeah.
The women in the film are as important as the women in Shakespeare's own plays. Can mm-hmm. you tell me a bit about how you came to flesh them out? And
well, interestingly, we performed, and indeed Picture House presented our version of A Winter's Tale, The Winter's Tale, which we played in the West End a few years ago, with Judy playing Paulina, a very, very popular Shakespeare female character who speaks truth to power. She's intelligent and uncompromising in her assault on the male ego and fragility, in that case, of a man whose appalling actions lead ultimately to the death of his son, the loss of his son, something that haunts him all the way through that play. And we knew that we wanted to haunt Shakespeare with a similar problem, which was exactly what happened to his son. Shakespeare's own son, Hamnet, died at 11 years of age in 1596. The women in his life have much to say to him about this absenteeism. Of course, they understand that it has brought, you know, wealth, it has brought status, but it ain't brought him so much. And that has to be considered some kind of loss that needs to be resolved, in addition to the loss of Hamnet. So Ben, I think, particularly establishes Anne's forthrightness, 8 years older than Shakespeare and maybe 8 years wiser, and a Judith who has the kinds of problems that we understand can prevail amongst twins, another preoccupation of Shakespeare's writings. Ben has twins as well. So the understanding of those kinds of dynamics and of the disenfranchised at that time, particularly if in the case of Anne Hathaway and Judith Shakespeare, you cannot read or write, the frustration and suppression and the dismissal of their contribution that is so dangerous as a result of that is something that he articulates well, I think, just including those voices, especially when the truth is, the literal truth is, that both of those girls, those sisters, were involved in sexual scandals that the entire town knew about and that they would all have suffered from, however false allegations were or how tragic certain sort of liaisons were. So I think what Ben as a writer would always sort of try and go into something like this, trying to, without it being blandly equal, making sure that the differing voices got a chance to speak.
Can I tell you what it reminded me of a little bit? Just it came into my mind, was it reminded me of the Osbournes.
Oh, right, okay.
A little bit in that respect.
Right. Yeah, you know, like, interesting. Yeah,
yeah, and there's a wonderful bit where Jack says to Ozzy, well, Ozzy says, you know, I've given you everything, you know, a house, and what more do you want? And Jack says, a father.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and yeah. I thought that was a really levelling
yes.
kind of thing to say to someone
like that. Interesting analogy, because we had no... What I said to Ben was, I said, I have no concerns about, in fact, would embrace the idea that this played as powerfully and directly as a reality show or as a soap opera, because sometimes that's what our lives feel like. Why should it be any different for Shakespeare, a man who seemed to understand human beings inside out? So you'd think he was indeed writing from the inside out.
And for you, how did it feel to finally inhabit this person that's been, you know, so central to your entire career?
It felt like it was a kind of something connected so strongly to my very first trip out as a kid. I was a 16-year-old and I hitchhiked to Stratford and I saw the plays and I visited these places. And it was in the wake of having been so sort of unsettled in a positive way by realizing that the Romeo and Juliet, which I'd seen with a 1,000 kids and was completely transported by, and then a production of King Lear that I'd gone to see in London, which I didn't really understand a word of, but was sort of knocked out by. Just, I felt I shook afterwards. I didn't really understand why. I wanted to know where that came from. And so at 16, I started to go, well, apparently he was a real man, and apparently he lived in Stratford, so I'm going there, and the theatre is there where they still do his plays. And that was the beginning of trying to put the two things together. And so to have finally, to 2 hours after beginning makeup in the morning, open your eyes and look in the mirror and the man's arrived and borrowed you for a bit, or you've borrowed him, I was quite moving to feel that sort of that part of this particular creative pilgrimage that I've been on.
And all is true. Was that a gift of a name? You know, did you just see that and think that is the name of our film, or was it
took a while. We had lots of titles. We went through The Man from Stratford, The Return, Shakespeare's Garden. We went through a whole pile of them, and then really the facts threw it into sort of pole position when we realized that Henry VIII was playing on the night, or the afternoon probably, that the Globe Theatre burnt down, and that alternative title is All Is True. And I suppose we havered for a bit, because not everything in this film we can confirm is true. However, it might be argued that in terms of the drama of it, part of what it says is that all the differing opinions from the characters, particularly in the centre of the family here, which may in themselves contradict each other, all have their own personal authenticity and validity. And that it's, so in a sense, however disparate they may seem, all is true. Judith's voice is important as William's, and Anne's as Susanna's, and or even Thomas Lucy, who, why shouldn't he be allowed a voice just because he annoys some people? And so it did, ultimately it felt very inclusive, but like Shakespeare, who's so ironic about these things, he writes plays like Much Ado About Nothing, As You Like It, Twelfth Night, or What You Will. All Is True has that same sort of Shakespearean wink of, what do you reckon, is it?
That's what I loved. Yeah, I just thought it worked on many levels.
Thank you.
What do you think, having played it now and seen it and lived in it, which character do you think Shakespeare himself most resembles out of all his...
My own feeling is that a character that I suspect admired enormously was Benedict in Much Ado About Nothing. I think he liked that he was a practical man, a soldier without machismo, but somebody who, in the terms of the day, was loyal, a man who, despite himself, was sort of courtly, civilized, and rather intimidated by, but also rather thrilled by, the female company and women in general, but who hid himself from the means by which he might be hurt in the pursuit of such things. I think he was such good company, and he always had a silly streak. I think one of the things I like about this Shakespeare in this film is he's often a bit bewildered. He's a bit sort of beleaguered, not unlike Ozzy. I think Benedict has a bit of that, and I think there's a compassion in the writing for that character that strikes me as very personal and tender.
Thank you.